Hey, what's going on, everybody? Excited to welcome Music Record Shop on, sponsoring the Rock Paper Podcast. Go down and check them out, 4191A Manchester Avenue in the Grove, right between the demo and the ready room. Official store hours are Tuesday through Sunday, 12 p.m. to 8 p.m. They do a new music happy hour every Friday. Go down and get yourself some new music. They've got a great local selection. They have also a CD, vinyl, and some tapes. So go pick up some new music, support local, musicrecordshop.com. Are you and your friends trying to figure out what to do tonight? Hit up do314.com, the best place to find out about all the concerts and comedy shows and art openings and other cool stuff going on around St. Louis every night of the week. They're also giving away tickets to shows and festivals all the time. Go follow them on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at do314. Take it from me, I'm always trying to find shows, and this is where I go, do314.com.
Hello, this is Tyler Stokes from Delta Soul Revival, and you're listening to the Rock Paper Podcast.
Just tonight.
Hey everybody, Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, episode 99.
Woo!
Woo!
The Wayne Gretzky episode.
Yeah. hanging out with my new friend, Tyler Stokes. Welcome to the show, man.
Well, thank you for having me.
Man, you've been a guy I've been following for a while. I think the first time we met and I said hi to you and thing, I think might have been the Turquoise release party at the Duck Room. Maybe. I think that might have been the first show.
Yeah, that was
I saw you guys play. That was 2013, I think, or whatever.
Yeah, it was Distro's first show in St. Louis, yeah. Actually. When I say Distro DSR, yeah. I always say Distro just to the band.
Right.
I realize it's kind of funny to other people. But, yeah, that was our first show in St. Louis.
Really?
And, I'll always remember that show. It was great. You know, it's like the culmination of everything from my 11-year-old dreams to play on, you know, stage with Devin and that. And plus, just the atmosphere was awesome and everyone, you know, came out and we packed it and you know, it's just a show you remember for a real long time.
Definitely, yeah.
And it's really cool when the merch line is really long, you know, that like you need to run over and get your girlfriend and tell her to, or your ex-girlfriend, you know, tell her to be like, get over there, you know. So that was just really humbling, real cool, man.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that was when we first, said hi and we, you know, and I think, that night I picked up, like a live EP out.
Bootlegs. Yeah, or
so,
whatever it was.
So I was listening to some of that and then like, you know, and then, I know you've been, you know, bouncing around a little, you guys lived in Springfield for a while and.
Yeah, well, the band started in Springfield. So I grew up in St. Louis.
Right.
Technically, like, my music career actually started when I was 13. I sat in at Hammerstones with Marquise Knox the week before I was 14. And he liked it, and we struck up a friendship, and I played that summer with Marquise, actually.
Okay.
So when I was 14. So that was, like, my first start. So I weirdly played at BB's and all that long before DSR ever came around.
Okay.
And there are some funny stories. There's, like, a couple local musicians that were like, I recognize you. You know, it was like, well, I was a baby 7 years ago.
Yeah.
But, it's kind of a funny story. I didn't write music for a while. I had, like, band and kind of a jammy band called Bucket of Truck in high school that was, you know, we were good and we did really well for, you know, being a high school band. That was a lot of fun. And when that stopped, I didn't write for a couple years. And then, and this kind of goes with the Devin thing as well, I saw like a Devin show, a Honey Tribe show, and I just got home and I was like, man, I want to write again. Mm-hmm. And I wrote 5 songs in a week, just like that. 3 of them are on this record. That's the crazy part. 4 of them are on the record.
Okay.
Out of the 5 on the record, that's 4 of them are on there. So it was just some weird, you know, coincidence thing. And I showed it to Devin, and he said, man, you need to do this. He listened to like 30 seconds. He's like, okay. Yeah. And I'd shown Devin thousands of stuff before that. You know, not even expect, just getting his criticism and things like that. But he's like, you need to do this. You need to put this together. I was like, okay, and that was when I was going to school in Springfield. Mm-hmm. So we started in Springfield, and then started branching out and playing, you know, Memphis and KC a little bit, and St. Louis, things like that. And then after my 4 years of college, I spent 6 months in St. Louis. This is where it gets hazy, and everyone's really confused. 6 months in St. Louis doing, like, 1 credit hour to finish. And then I did 6 months in Kansas City, living there.
Okay.
Meanwhile, still semi-traveling, but not really that much while I was in my internship in KC.
Okay.
And I've been back in St. Louis for 3 weeks now.
Yeah.
So it's good kind of starting adulthood.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy, man. I've been, you know, I think I added you on Facebook then or a while back, and I've been trying to follow some of the journey, and it's exciting that now we're getting ready to have the release of the Witness EP.
Yeah.
Or is it an EP? You call it an EP?
Yeah, EP.
Right. Since five tracks.
It's confusing. It took me a while.
Yeah.
I think I looked it up on Wikipedia because I got so many questions. But yeah, EP, which apparently is extended play.
Sure.
It's usually like a 4 to 5, 4 to 6 track.
Yeah.
And the LP is the 10 to 11, 12. Sure. Yeah, it's, I mean, that's, this record is, we did it down in Memphis about almost 2 years ago now, with an amazing absolute cast of, you know, Devin just hooked me up like no other. I can't really thank him enough. We had Yanrico Scott of the Derek Trucks Band playing drums, who has a Grammy.
Yeah.
We had a great bassist from Springfield.
Royal Southern Brotherhood.
Royal Southern Brotherhood. And you know, I think he played with MC Hammer at one time.
Oh, yeah.
And he's jammed with Stevie. I mean, ridiculous amount of credibility.
Yeah.
And also
he's pretty good.
Yeah, he's all right, you know. He's all right, but and then we had an amazing bassist named Sean Monday from Springfield played bass, and Rick Steff from Lucero actually played keyboards. Who's one of the most, all the musicians in the room were amazing, by far better than me, which is the best situation you could ask for. But Rick Steff came in and wrote the chords down while he heard the song the first time. It was ridiculous, and then played it and like killed it within two takes.
Right.
It was awesome, and. And then, you know, we had Pete Matthews, who's this awesome engineer. It happens to be from Springfield. So we actually somehow know all, like, the same people in Springfield.
Yeah,
really
okay.
Small world. And he worked at Arden Studios. So he worked with Paul Simon, ZZ Top, and North Mississippi All-Stars, Wu-Tang Clan, all that good stuff. And he's literally one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. And just, I learned so much from him. And then we had Brad Blackwood Master, who's the guy who did like moves like Jagger from Maroon 5.
Yeah.
And so the fact that I somehow finagled my life to have two Grammy Award winners work on my 5-song EP is just unreal, you know, and really like crazily humbling and really cool, you know.
Yeah, man. Yeah, that's a... you know, I've never been on the recording part like that and done that kind of stuff. But I had a similar moment a while back. I went to see The Urge play.
Yeah.
And big fan of those guys, been following them for a long time. And I got to go VIP, hang out with them at the after party.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm in this, like, roped-off area of, it was at Ballpark Village.
Yeah.
And I'm upstairs in this room. You know, party's going on. They got a sort of roped off area. They got bottle service and going on. And I'm sitting there hanging out with Steve, Jerry, John, Matt, Carl, and Bill. And I'm just like looking around. I'm like, this is nuts. Like, you know, if I could somehow tell, you know, 13-year-old Shane that someday he's going to be hanging out, you know, VIP with The Urge or, you know, like, it just would, you know, blow his mind. And I'm like, so I imagine for you, it's a similar situation. You're in a room with, you know, Grammy winners and an Allman and everything else.
I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, just the little things I finagle myself into is really cool. I mean, I sat in with the band for LA. We opened and I met Gary Clark Jr.
Oh, wow.
And, and hung out with Flava Flav later that night. That's actually a funny story. We were at the same hotel as Public Enemy.
Yeah.
And so I got to hang out with Flava Flav, which was... He's a nice guy.
Yeah.
He just likes to have fun.
Yeah.
But, yeah, just all the stuff is just so cool, you know?
Sure.
And it's really cool and weird how this works, you know? It's like... another thing is I opened for Robert Cray, and how I did that is just... In Springfield, he came to the Galois, and my best friend, who I used to play with, and obviously we had to have a band good enough to know, get the slap, but he was like, I texted him, I was like, I want to open for Cray, man, if there's any possible way, and we were doing really well in Springfield.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, and so, I mean, I remember buying Cray's record, you know, I would have never thought to ever even meet him, so, and it's just, it's really cool, you know, and that's kind of what happens, that every relationship... This is just in life in general that you meet, you know, you should harbor and see.
Yeah.
And whether it's not even about business, it's just about meeting people and getting new insight.
Yeah, it's all about being cool to people. And, you know, if you're a nice guy, you know, think it's gonna do wonders for you. You know, just just being good people to people, you know, other people, and it just gets you a long way. I've definitely, you know, feel like that's, you know, big part of the success of me doing this show, and just being able to meet some of the people I have is just, you know, I try not to be an asshole. That's the biggest thing, you know.
And just ask.
Right.
That's the thing. Yeah. Like, there's never a harm in asking anyone, you know.
How was, my only Robert Cray experience, I mean, that guy's an incredible talent, big fan of his, but my only experience, seeing him live, I saw him open for, or not open, I'm sorry, Kenny Wayne Shepherd open for him at Lumiere here in St. Louis, and Kenny and his band is just incredible, like, and him and Noah together, and then, like, but when they left the stage, everybody's up on their feet, screaming, dancing, partying. He probably left with, like, Deja Voodoo or whatever, or something, you know, something like that, and, like, and just had everybody, you know, feeling good, and then, you know, Robert comes on, and he's much, much smoother and kind of mellow, and, but, you know, like, I was, like, just that particular setting, it was putting me to sleep after following Kenny, because just Kenny was
totally
so good, so much energy and stuff, and Robert's a lot different style, so it wasn't a, I don't know if it was the best pairing, but it was, I mean, it was made for a great show, but, like, for me, like I said, just, Robert was a bit boring for me after watching Kenny, just...
Yeah, and that's not, I mean, that's not a, it's really understandable. It's like I said, I studied music therapy, and, you know, so there's, like, insight into the way, you know, your emotions react to music, slash your state of mind, state of being, and when you have music that clashes with your state of mind, if you're really energetic and then a slow song comes on, it's going to actually have a really even worse reaction than it would if it just came on when you're at normal stimulus, you know? And yeah, that was just a bad pairing, you know what I mean? Like, they're both great, but it's, you know, Cray, the beautiful and wonderful part about Cray is his patience and his, you know, and I love that kind of soul sound, that black soul sound, you know? And Kenny Wayne Shepherd's great too, but it's just it's two different types of things.
Definitely,
you know, it's like being like, it's not really this, but it's like Johnny Cash and then some other, like, you know, really loud country artist or something that's different from different areas and different times and different vibes. You know, and so I fully understand that. I've only seen him when I opened for him, so obviously, you know, it was a there's no way we were better than him, you know what I mean? So, I mean, we did really well, and it was awesome, and just in front of 700 people or plus, but, yeah, I mean, I loved it. Just the patience, that's something I really wish I had, and that's something that I love about great old blues guitar players, is their, like, patience and ability to play four notes, and then just make it sing, and then make it better than if you played 80 notes, you know? And that's something I strive to do all the time. I cannot do it yet, you know.
Yeah, man. What you said Gary Clark, how'd you come about meeting him?
Meeting him, that's kind of a funny story. I went to the Chuck Berry show. My friend, the bassist in DSR, Justin Corgan, plays in Carrie and the Catapults. It's an awesome band around town.
Yeah.
Jason Cooper and Carrie and a cast of others, you know. And they're just one of the best around town. I love listening to them. I literally just asked Jason, like, hey man, can you put me on the guest list? I want to go see Chuck Berry. And so he did, and I got to go see Chuck Berry, which was just ridiculous in itself, of the fact that I was like, hey, there's Chuck Berry. Here's the Duck Room. And there was a guy with his guitar on his back the whole time, and I just, after the show, he was just hanging out, and I just went up and I was like, hey man, what's the story? You know, he was alone, and I go to shows alone, and, you know, it's just interesting. And he's like, well, I'm a musician out of L.A. I was like, oh. He's like, yeah, I just came to see Chuck Berry. And I was like, you flew in to see Chuck Berry? And he's like, yeah, I flew in to see Chuck Berry, and I had my guitar just in case I could jam with him. But obviously, for very obvious reasons, only Billy Peak really gets to jam, and very worthingly so. And his name's Nikhil Carullo, and so the NK band, and they're out of LA. and he plays Summerfest in Milwaukee. So he's open for Dave Matthews and Ray LaMontagne. He's played Bonnaroo, and he plays Sundance, and he writes for a bunch of people in L.A., and he's just one of the nicest dudes I've ever met. So I was like, you know what, you're here for one night. I'm going to take you out. I'm going to show you around. And we went to, you know, 1860s and jammed there, and we just hit it off, and I... What I wanted to do, especially when I was coming out of my internship, is I just called a bunch of people who I really look up to and respect and just asked them, what's your best advice for me? How do I do this? You know, what's the right way of going about it? And he was one of the people, and he goes, you want to come open for Gary Clark Jr.? And I said, hell yes, I do. Yeah. And so that was just out of this world to go to Summerfest and open for him. And, you know, obviously, Gary Clark is my total... man, musical crush right now. Like, he's...
The guy's a freak, man. He's so good.
Like, he is. And he just has that... I hate using this phrase, but he has that it factor that you can't explain. But he's just the coolest guy.
Yeah.
Everything he does is so cool. The way he dresses, mm-hmm. presents himself, carries himself, plays. It's just the coolest thing ever. Yeah. And yeah, it was amazing to get backstage and meet all those dudes. We talked to a drummer for a while, and I met Gary Clark, just said thanks.
Yeah.
And he was, you know, nice guy, but obviously when you're on tour that long, he was ready to get to the bus and go to sleep. I don't blame him at all.
So. I met him. He played the pageant about a year ago or something, somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. Anyway, when he was out touring for Black and Blue, and he... met him out, so after, you know, slayed the show. Nick Moss Band opened up the show that night.
Really, we actually, Nick Moss Band opened for him in Milwaukee, and the keyboardist went to Priory, and I went to Chaminade, and we were both in Milwaukee, and you're like, you're from St. Louis? You're from St. Louis? It was crazy. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, so I met him out back. I went hanging out by the bus for a minute, trying to say hi, and Gary stood out there and signed whatever, and you know, I didn't have my Black and Blue vinyl, but I did buy a poster, and I got him to sign that, and I got a picture with him, and
that's awesome.
But yeah, generally one of the coolest guys. Like, I mean, just like you said, like, but personally, like, you know, I'm getting to meet him and talk to him, and like, for a moment, and then like, somebody other like phone, and they were like, hey, will you say hi to my sister or whatever it was. And, you know, he's like, you know, Gary's like in another conversation, this like lady's a little drunk or whatever it was, and just like hands him a phone. He's like, what, who am I talking to, who's this, you know? And he's like, oh, hey, what's up, this is Gary Clark Jr., you know, that. And it was just like, just the fact that he's like that cool, just to, you know, chill and hang out. And
exactly.
And but yeah, just, you know, one of the, you know, just the best talents coming up, you know, recently. Like, he's just been on fire lately, man.
Yeah, and he's the perfect combination of progressive and moving the music forward, but keeping those roots in there, you know, and that's the key. Is, I think this could be a whole entire another podcast, there's something to, especially, I mean, I played a lot of jazz too, and jazz and blues, you know, people always talk about his dying and things like that. And I'm like, well, yes and no. I think there's a certain, sometimes when you just always play the old stuff and you think, like, people should just like this. It's not like that. We learned Robert Johnson because of Zeppelin. And Zeppelin was playing real progressive stuff. They weren't playing blues to people in the 70s.
Right.
You know, it was real heavy. And that's how we figured out about them. And so I think it's really cool if, you know, some cats get into Gary Clark, and then, you know, they're listening to a podcast, and Gary Clark's like, yeah, I love Albert King.
Sure.
And they're like, well, I should check this Albert King guy out. And that's kind of how it works. So that's what I love. He's
definitely
doing both of them. Same with John Mayer. He does that a lot, too.
Yeah, I do a lot of that, you know, as more and more as I, the addiction of music gets stronger and stronger, I'm always, you know, out looking for more, and I... you know, and that's what I'm doing, is I'm kind of like discovering everything backwards. You know, when I find somebody really great that I like, and then they credit, you know, but I'll go back and I'll find that album of Albert King or whatever, you know, these, some of the the originators of the, you know, what mm-hmm. the blues as we know it, and you know, and you listen to that stuff, and you realize where all the, you know, the influences come from, and you piece up, put all the pieces together, and it's a, you know, for me, it's a lot of fun. But
yeah,
I've kind of ripped on Zeppelin a few times on the show. Like I think they're amazing at what they did, but mm-hmm. the fact that, like, you know, how many of those are old blues songs that they, you know, essentially covers, you know, yeah. that, you know, like Led Zeppelin 1 is like 80% sample material. Like,
and 2, dude. No, yeah. I mean, Led Zeppelin 2 is right. the same way. Yeah, I've obviously have mixed feelings about that.
Yeah.
You know, and.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're, and somebody else said it too, but like they're like the greatest cover band almost. Like, you know, like they, I mean, they had a lot of original stuff, but in the same sense, but like a lot of the, what they're, more what they're known for aren't even their songs, like, you know.
Yeah, yes and no, but they transformed it so much.
It's
I don't view them as cover songs.
Yeah.
I think they should have credited the writers
sure.
fully. That's yeah. I'm not arguing with that. And yeah. now it's all fixed because you look at that. You look at, if you buy a CD, it'll be like Plant yeah. Page Johnson, yeah. which is kind of funny. But I think that, and also, you also got to look back then, copyright rules were different. Sure. You know, I don't think they were like, oh, we got to make sure we yeah. copyright. I think they just were singing what they, that's the whole thing. Yeah. Everyone did that. Stones, I mean,
yeah,
everyone.
They weren't the only, yeah. I mean, you know, yeah. Beach Boys and, you know.
Yeah, but you know, and I think that is funny, and there's yeah. definitely a point to that, but it's just, they reimagined it in such a crazily different sense
yeah.
that it's like they just took some lyrics, but you would never, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that's right, but at the same time, it's
definitely,
they redefined.
Yeah,
things.
They like, you ever heard the original version of Dazed and Confused?
Yeah, like on Zeppelin 1?
No,
like
the original, like, folk version of the song. Like,
no, I actually haven't.
There's a Jake Holmes, I believe is his name.
Mm.
He's the original writer of the song, and like there's like a, it's a real kind of dark and like a mellow kind of recording of it, but you know, the lyrics are all
yeah.
word for word, you know. He wrote yeah. the song Dazed and Confused, and then you hear, you know, Page, you know, put this, you know, tasty riff on it and stuff, and it totally yeah. comes to life. And that, so they are great at what they do. Like that, I love, you know, I love
yeah.
Led Zeppelin, but the fact that, like you said, they just, they didn't credit a lot of the stuff where it should have been and
yeah.
things, and like where, and they try to, you know, even I think the story was, and just because I'm a nerd about rock and roll history and stuff,
yeah.
and like I listen to a lot of this stuff, but I think the story goes like that. Jake Holmes got to open for the Yardbirds
mm-hmm.
one night, and or something like along those lines, and he played the song, Paige heard the song, then took the song to Led Zeppelin, and Led, you know,
yeah.
like that kind of thing, like, you know, where, and so I don't know, you know, who knows what happened, but
yeah.
But that's you know, it just, it'd be kind of a weird coincidence if that's exactly, you know.
Yeah,
but
I mean, I think they're obviously a little more than that, but you know, there's, and not like I said, this could be another podcast, I don't
yeah.
want to get too crazily off topic, but you know, there, that's kind of how a lot of music grows though,
sure.
and creativity is, you know, creativity and advancements in music and art is never just this is different. It's taking one element of something
yeah.
and changing it. And it's the same with bebop and jazz. All those bebop songs, what they did was they took the chord progressions of Gershwin songs and they just played eighth note melodies on them. You know, that's really what it is. So like, I can actually put it, but either way, so like I Got Rhythm, you know. That's the original one. And then what Charlie Parker did Oleo, which is, you know, literally the same chords and everything. But that was an advancement for that, you know. And I totally live and prescribe by the good artist borrow, great artist steal.
Yeah.
Not copyright things. I don't want to say that. So I think there is something to that, but obviously they definitely should have given credit to
yeah.
the artists. I think that's a big problem,
sure.
you know.
I mean, we're still, going through, like, with this, you know, there's only so many things to do with, you know, but, yeah. like, but even, like, today, you know, one of the most recent's, like, that, like, Sam Smith and Tom Petty, mm-hmm. you know, that whole story that, yeah. you know, and, like, I ultimately got Tom Petty a Grammy now, but, you know, like, it just, yeah. you know, one way or another, I guess it's, worked out for Tom Petty, but, and he's getting royalty checks and all that stuff now,
yeah.
but, you know, and you hear it, but it's, like, the fact that, like you said, it's just that you make that change, and it's an original song, but it also sounds an awful lot like this song.
Yeah, that I think was totally accidental.
Yeah.
I don't think that was, you know, it's a totally different style. I mean, you also got to realize, there's 12 notes.
Yeah.
There's 12 notes. And, let's obviously, in the Western Canada music,
sure.
there are 12 notes.
Yeah.
And when you break it down to the pentatonic scale or the major scales, there's only 8, really, in a key. So, you're going to have that,
yeah.
you know, and there's... And especially because we dig either 4/4 and sometimes 3/4 in a random.
Yeah.
I mean, your options are limited, so you're gonna have that. It's gonna overlap.
Definitely. One of my favorite stories. You know, it's obviously been very well documented, but the Vanilla Ice and the Queen Bohemian Rhapsody. You know, like the
Under Pressure.
Yeah. Sorry. But where, you know, he's like, yeah, there it goes. Da-na-na-na-na-na-na. And then mine goes,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so that was such a great quote. One of those, like, I love the 90s quote, you know.
Totally.
So,
but what's funny about that, though, is here's another flip of the coin, is there's a song called by Chic called Good Times.
Yeah.
So, you know, the boom, 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 boom,
yeah.
doom, boom, 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 and the Queen's bassist was at that studio session.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why I went.
Yeah.
And that's what he based that bass line off of. And that's one of the best bass lines of all time. All
right.
So, but no, Vanilla Ice stole that.
Yeah. What is that? Nile Rodgers, right?
Nile Rodgers, yeah. man. One of the most essential pop music people ever.
Yeah. You still doing it. Get lucky. Still got another new hit recently, you know.
Totally.
But yeah, the guy's been doing it, 40 years or whatever.
Exactly. And then when rap came out, I mean, everyone sampled Nile Rodgers.
Yeah.
You know, Mo Money, Mo Problems.
Yeah.
That's Nile Rodgers.
Yeah.
You know.
That's another one I don't get, like, pretty much like any Puff Daddy song or P. Diddy or Diddy or whatever, you know, which one ever you want to call them. But, like, you listen to his album and stuff, and, like, you know, I know there's samples and things, but a lot of his stuff, like, it's, yeah, pretty much, like, directly the same instrumental and stuff, and then he just puts a rap verses over it and stuff, what was that one he done, the Godzilla soundtrack, it was, like,
for
Kashmir and stuff.
Yeah,
and
he did that with Jimmy Page, though.
Yeah.
That was, like, a collaborative.
Right.
Weird. That's such a weird, like, 2000s collaboration.
Yeah.
But
there's a lot of that. But
that's how I learned about Kashmir.
Yeah, right.
Godzilla soundtrack, man.
man, you got your guitar. You know, been playing a bit. You wanna play us one?
Yeah, that's cool.
Let's give people what they tune in for.
What they're paying for instead of our beliefs.
Yeah. What do you want to play, man?
Just the vibe. Let's do this is off the record. This is the first track on it. This is called When I Found Love. I got really into. I might play it first and then I'll explain it.
Sure.
The other way around.
Yeah, we can do that.
Let's play it first. All right. Playing. I'm tired.
Yeah.
Talking a lot. But this was actually the first DSR song, even before I knew it was going to be DSR. This is one of the first song I wrote. And first song I showed Dev and everything. And it's got a Latin vibe, which I'll kind of explain after.
Okay.
So here it goes. Thank you. place where it all started, but you can't find a flaw in me. Sat there, hearts that never parted, and a fire that couldn't be seized. Well, I ate well with the scraps under the table and all the opinions that we have hid inside. And I can't stop, cause I'd like to kiss us trouble, so we use one great moment to hide. When I found love, never ever felt like that before. The emotions of my heart start to explore, finding all the things I could not see. Look, I'm missing tears. Life is like a hammer, breaking bodies and souls in two. Grab me, so tender and so deeply, who came and stole the rhythm. Well, one life, you gotta live it to the fullest. The past gives you nowhere to run. Contentment. There's no more to learn. When I found love, never felt like that before. The emotions of my heart start to explore, finding all the things I could not see. Look, I'm missing tears.
Inspired that one.
What inspired
did you,
that one?
Did you find some love or something? Or
find some love? Yeah. What's funny is, yeah. Sometimes, especially for the songs old, I got to go read back and think of the time and think of the lyrics. I pretty much did that one. Is I was in a bad relationship.
Right.
It wasn't really that bad. There's nothing like abusive or anything going on like that. But. You know, I want to make that, make that clear. It wasn't anything like that. It was just, this was when I rediscovered I wanted to do music. For a while, I wanted to, settle down, just do the music therapy thing. And I just realized that was kind of a phase because I was really into this girl. And, that happens. You're young. You're really malleable at that age. And then when I had this coming out party of music, I was like, I need to go do this. I remember the passion that I had for this. And so a lot of that's just talking about just being, trapped in, a relationship, not knowing really what to do, and just knowing that, your purpose is a little bigger than what's going on with life. And I think everyone has that at one point. That's why people start businesses and they start things like that. And it's, and hopefully you just do it in a positive way. And
definitely.
Never, I'm trying to think of the lyrics in. I never felt like that before. But there's also a positive message of love is great. And it's like, when I found love, I never felt like that before. Emotions of my heart start to explore, finding all the ways life could not see. Nunca me sentí así, which is, never felt like that before. So that's that in Spanish. But, and that's kind of how it came about. And, cool. The whole Spanish vibe to it was the, and this is something that that's one of the main questions, you know, people ask about Delta Soul Revival when they see us live, because we play a lot of Latin kind of influence and stuff. And it's real. I was in college, and it was my freshman year, and I had a Mexican roommate, and I said to myself, I'm going to learn Spanish.
Yeah.
So I learned Spanish, and I talked to him every day, all day. He would speak to me in English, I'd speak to him in Spanish, and I learned and picked it up, and now I'm like conversationally fluent.
Huh.
And meanwhile, that time I started listening to Buena Vista Social Club and Celia Cruz and, you know, a bunch of people. And it's funny because I was not listening to Santana at the time, because that's what everyone immediately thinks.
Right.
And I listened to Santana back when, but the thing is I play blues rock and I like Latin stuff. So naturally it comes together and sounds a little like Santana.
Yeah.
I've also based a lot of things musically off of claves, which are the rhythmic basis for Latin music.
Okay.
And that's based off the rumba clave, which if we really want to get really technical, there's 3-2 clave, which is... So, 1-2-3, which actually... Okay, I'm getting off topic, because I could talk about the African diaspora into the West, and it turns from Africa to... You know, but what there is a funny story about rumba clave, which rumba clave is when the third one is dragged a little bit. It's a little late. So instead of 1-2-3-1-2, it's 1-2-3-1-2-1-2. And kind of legend is in Cuba, they'd have all these street bands, and they said after a while, what would happen is they'd be drinking.
Right.
And then slowly over time, the clave player would just be a little later with that three. And then it kind of got that swing to it. So that's where and I like mixing claves with a 2 and 4, you know.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how that came about.
Nice, man. So so when you have that... You wrote the song and you've got this idea, but like, when you take something like this, do you present it to Devin pretty much in that format when you ask him to help, you know, come on board and help produce?
Yeah, well, a lot of, I can't write like this anymore, but what I did for a long time is I just had GarageBand and I wrote and recorded demos all at the same time.
Right.
So I wrote and played all the instruments to where I could hear what was in my head really right away. And the nice part about that, too, is when you're done with the song, you already have a demo that's written.
Yeah.
So I have 40 demos on my computer, you know, of things. And now I've kind of had to change it because I've had computer problems, and I've also been trying to write songs differently just to keep things fresh and try different techniques. But, and so what I had was, I was really scared. I almost didn't even show him the CD, which is no reason. We're friends. It's, you know, the worst thing to say is like, oh, okay, good job. Good job, sport. You know, like, keep working, which is what he did every other time because I wasn't ready. You know, I didn't have the stuff yet. And, but it ended up, I just came up with the CD of my demos and played the intro for him. And he kind of, and I wasn't going to sing. I wasn't a singer at all. I wasn't going to sing, and he's like, no, you have a really unique voice. It's different. He's like, you should sing. And so singing's kind of a relatively new thing for me. I was just a guitar player till DSR, and then I was like, well, better work on it. So,
man, I really like it all, man. I think you're a great singer. I love the guitar work, and
thank you.
It's fun to, like I said, be a part of this, to watch you and, you know, sort of, you know, coming in on your own with this album and everything, and it's exciting stuff, man.
Cool. Thanks.
I'm glad Devin, you know, whatever, you know, a little bit of support and things, and help push you out there to do it, to sing and to play. And
yeah, man. I mean, I can't thank him enough. Yeah. You know, it's not even, well, it is obviously for the physical, like, you know, help me with Memphis, help me with the record, but it's just, he was the first person to. One of the first people to put belief in myself. At that point in my time, I didn't have belief that I could ever be. I kind of like was just like, oh no, I'll never, you know, do anything. And he was like, no, you can do this.
Yeah.
You know, you're good. You have this different. It's what I always say is, whatever I do is for better or for worse, is real Tyler Stokes. Yeah. You know, it's like, I write this stuff, it's going to sound like that, and when you hear it, you're like, okay, Tyler wrote that, you know? Which is sometimes good, sometimes bad. Depends who's in the audience. But, you know, just really instilling that belief in me. And, there's been multiple times where I've been like, Devin, are you just doing this because we're friends? And he's like, I'm a busy man. I don't have time to, and he really, it's really true. He's like, I don't have time to waste my time doing any charity work for you, you know? And he's like, and obviously I showed him stuff before, but it was just waiting for that process to mature and go. So
how'd you guys, how'd you guys become friends and everything? Where did you guys like, didn't you guys like neighbors or something, or or something like that?
Yes, we were neighbors.
Yeah.
This is just, I tell this story all the time, but it just cracks me up. So I was playing guitar when we started, you know, I liked Lynyrd Skynyrd classic rock. And side note, I actually grew up playing to vinyls because my parents were like, we're not going to buy you CDs. We're just going to put a vinyl player. We have all the classic rock on vinyls. So that's really kind of a cool thing.
Nice.
So I was playing to Allman Brothers vinyls and playing over the jams, things like that. And then my dad's like, you know, Devin next door, you know, is the son, and he works, you know, he has his own band and things. You should go talk to him. So I showed up on his front porch with a guitar. And he opened the door, and I was like, hey, I'm Tyler, I live next door. And Devin's like, well, okay, play me something. Yeah. And then I did, and he was like, oh, this isn't just a kid with a guitar. Not that I don't mean the sound, but he was like, oh, this kid has some passion, and this kid can do it. So, you know, he was like, oh, and I would just go and hang out. And then one day I was playing with my friends around his house, and I heard this band from his basement. And I was like, oh, what's that? So I like snuck away from my friends and just knocked on the door, and I opened, and it was Honey Tribe practicing.
Yeah.
And I was like, can I just watch, man? Like, yeah. Sure. So every Wednesday, get home from school, do my homework, and I would go over there and watch them rehearse. And I did that for about a year religiously, you know, and that was way cool. So I met all those dudes. So like George Potsos and Dave Cowles and Jack, they're like, oh man, you're the little kid. Like, you're the 12-year-old kid. I'm like, yeah, I am. Except times 10 years.
Sure.
And that's kind of how it started. And he would do awesome stuff. Like, if he had an extra guitar, he would lend it. He gave me a couple of guitars where he's like, hey, I'm not going to use this, man. I know you'll use it. And I definitely did. And from then on, we just kept in touch and always did stuff. And I'd send him stuff or give him a recording. And then finally, it just blossomed into something great, and it's been really cool to watch his career go as well.
Definitely, yeah. It's you know, saying I don't have quite the personal connection, but definitely following him through Honey Tribe, seeing some shows, and him and his leads, and George on bass, man. Like George, he's one of my favorite bass players to watch in town, and the guy is
he's a great bass player, incredibly talented. Yeah, indeed, and a good singer too.
Yeah,
he's a great singer.
But yeah, like, and then I love those Honey Tribe records, and then, you know, it's exciting to see him branch out and do solo stuff. And then,
I was telling him, I was like, this is weird, but it's since I've seen it from the beginning, and I've been to the shows where Honey Tribe, and there's like six people there, and not that they sound a lot better than having that, but you know, it's kind of funny. I'm always like, dude, I'm like proud of you. I was like, I know that means that it means nothing coming from me, even though he's like, yeah, it totally does. Just to see him, you know, mature, especially musically, and then the whole Royal Southern Brotherhood thing was just an amazing thing for him, and he really did that so well. And now the Devin Allman Band is just a new step up of songwriting and sensitivity and creativity. So it's so great to see that and see his work ethic come finally getting the results.
When you got co-wrote together on Turquoise, right?
I was sending him songs for my record, and he'd be like, okay, cool, change this, or that sounds good, or, and he's like, yeah, that's a good one, we, you know, we may do that one. And I sent him There's Not Time, and he goes, do you mind if I use that on my record? And I was like, no. And
get in line, buddy.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, no, man, that sounds awesome. I would be honored. I love that, you know? And there was one time where I almost got a song on a Honey Trap record. That was real close. I don't even think he remembers that. But it was literally a week before they went to Memphis, and then I forgot about it. I still remember part of the song, actually. But either way, that was just way cool. And we did one Skype session where he was like, you know, let's work out this chord, so I'm going to, you know. And I told him, I was like, you know, do what you will, because you're going to do the same thing to my record anyway, so do what you will to it. And it turned out real cool. And I like that the DSR, we still do it our way. I like having that difference, you know. Yeah. But I thought it turned out great. And when I showed up in the studio, Yanrico was like, you're the kid that likes chord changes. Uh-huh. And I was like, yeah. There's a lot of chord changes in that one. So, but that was, like I said, it was an honor.
Yeah. That's, you don't see quite as much, like, you know, in blues and things, but there's a lot of, like, especially like in country music today, like, where, you know, singer songwriters will put out their album, you know, and then and then they'll sell songs to Nashville singers and you know, Blake Shelton to put a CD together of all of, and you know, he doesn't write any of the stuff, but it's you know, you see a lot more of that in country music and things. But like, it's cool that, you know, you got yourself a nice, you know, writing credit on on Turquoise and all that stuff, and that he, you know, believed in your writing and in the song enough to say, hey, man, I'd like to put this on my album and stuff.
Crazy, so, I would never thought, you know, that would have happened. And I've done, it's kind of weird because my brother's actually a professional filmmaker, so I've done short film soundtracks for him. So there's a couple of short films that I've done soundtracks to, I love doing that stuff, to where I love doing different stuff of DSR. I mean, one's like a slave chant, one's like a Danny Elfman type thing. I also did, there's one day where I like wrote this real poppy song, and my friend in Nashville, Bryce Merritt, who's an awesome, like, real Jason Mraz-y type, he covered it and he just killed it. It was like, I was like, Bryce, you're gonna kill this song way better. And so that was also a really cool thing. And I love doing that. You know, if I write something, I'm like, this really isn't right for DSR. It's not right for my voice. But I find someone who can make that, it's just an awesome thing. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard stories like that. The guys, like, you know, they can write these catchy pop songs, but they just, like, hate that, you know, that genre, kind of, like, making pop music and stuff. They want to make, like, rock or blues or whatever, but, like, it comes very easy for them to write these catchy hooks and things, and, like, you know, but it might not fit for you, but you can, you know somebody that can do something with it, and, like, that's cool that you guys can, you can keep that collaborative effort going and stuff. You want to play another one from Witness, or what do you think, or you got something else you want to play, or?
Yeah, that's cool. I can do a, let's see what I want to do here.
Yeah, put you on the spot.
Well, no, I was trying to think of, I'm like, there's some times where I just have, like, songs in my head that I'm like, this is the vibe, this is what I want to do, but, we'll do something from Witness. This song actually is, one of my favorite songs I've ever written, so I guess I'll play it and we'll talk about it. This one's called The River. This is the third track on this.
Stop and let me leave.
take me from the river now. I don't know what else to keep, but if I did, I'd give it all to you. The last advice is to say just it, 'cause the truth will help you. That song, wow. Yeah, so either way, but that was the river, and there's a really interesting kind of story behind that. I should probably do this more on the stage. I'm not like the here's a story and tell the story, especially since we're kind of a loud fun band, like right. Keep it grooving. But this song was, I work in hospice music therapy. That's what I did for 6 months in KC. And I also did a practicum, which is like you work for a semester in the field, my sophomore year of high school. And that was what happened was, if hospice, just real quick, hospice yeah. is where if the doctor can say that you're going to die in less than 6 months, they put you on hospice, which is provided by Medicare and everything like that. Look it up on Wikipedia if you don't know what it is. Either way, that's not the point. I worked with a patient who had, I can't even remember the disease, some debilitating disease. I believe she was only about 52 or so. You know, I think she had a couple strokes and things, had dysarthria and other things. And I worked with her, and she loved classic rock, which is real rare in hospice because the population tends to be a little older.
Right.
And I was the only, like, music therapist at the time that could really play, you know, like, Journey solos and Journey and all that stuff. She wanted that.
Don't stop.
Yeah, you know. But either way, I was, like, the only one that could, you know, do that because I'd just been playing guitar for a while. And so I went to a couple sessions with her, and then what happened was she went off of hospice, or she changed insurance, something like that, to where she wasn't with our hospice. And then towards the end of the semester, she came back on, but I was so busy with other things. I really tried to fit in one more session with her. The guy was like, you know, she's really looking forward to it, but I know you have a lot going on. And I just didn't get the chance to. Couldn't fit it in. So it ended up, you know, obviously, I got a call during the summer, and it was my supervisor just being like, I just want to let you know, this patient passed away. Obviously in hospice, it's not rare. It's just something you deal with a lot.
Yeah.
And the only thing that just kind of semi-bothered me was the fact I never got to play for her.
Yeah.
You know, and it wasn't anything that I did. It was just life. Sometimes you get busy.
Yeah.
And I was writing this song. I had the music for it. And then I had part of the music for it, and so I went home and I wrote the song, and the song's about hospice and just the journey into the afterlife and things like that. And when it goes into that big part and I hit that chorus, you know, I remember first time we played it, it's like I felt like I had closure. I felt I finally got to play that song for her, and it was just a wonderful feeling of, you know, I did it, and I just know that it's like, wherever she is, you know, like, she knows, like, okay, we're at peace, and we're both at peace now, you know, and I finally felt like that was the right way to end it, and so that's what that song's about and everything, and the lyrics obviously are just the hospice journey and the journey through death from a lot of things, which is a beautiful journey. It can be a beautiful journey, and so I like to do hospice to try and promote that. And then on a side note, that song's gone tons and tons of places. I've obviously played it a lot of places in front of people, but we got asked to do a Halloween concert with a 100-piece orchestra.
Whoa.
Yeah, it was another crazy finagling Tyler experience. And he was like, what song do you want to play? I was like, I want to play this song. And so the fact that, you know, she has this song written about her that got played by a 100-piece orchestra.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. And you can actually see that on YouTube.
Oh, really?
You can check it out. Yeah. That was one of the most amazing experiences ever. So that's just kind of the story behind that. And, you know, that one's dated, you know, dedicated to her.
Yeah. And that's beautiful, man. So. That's what I love about this, doing this stuff, man. Doing this show is, and being able to talk to singer-songwriters and, and getting those stories, you know. Sometimes I don't always like the like, you know, exactly, like, you know, the meaning of the song or whatever kind of thing, you know. But I love the where the inspiration comes from, you know, like hearing, hearing the moments that led up to what inspired the song and things like that. Like, you know, I don't want to hear, like, sometimes, because sometimes I love, you know, art's open to interpretation. So you, I take it and I listen to it and I'm like, oh, this is kind of what it means to me. And then if you tell me, like, oh, no, that means this, and, you know, and then, like, it kind of ruins my experience sometimes, you know, you know, or it could enhance also, but it but goes both ways. But, you know, but it's just, like, I love hearing the songwriting stories of where those where this stuff comes from. So that's a... Thank you for sharing it, man. That was
No worries. Thank you for it's like I said, I don't do it a lot on stage, and so it's like things like this. It's nice to sit down and then kind of remember, you know, where you were when you wrote it and why you wrote it and the inspiration behind that. And
very cool.
I write a lot about, especially I write a lot about my sad songs are about death, you know, and not even that they're always sad, but it's. You know, love and heart loss and things like that. I mean, that is a loss. So, and to me, that's the worst loss. That's, you know, a lot of things. So I do that a lot, but a lot, I try to phrase it in a beautiful light, you know, because it can be a beautiful process.
Yeah. It's part of life, man.
Yeah. It's not fun, but it's, you know.
Something we all go through. But yeah, that makes it relatable, though. I mean, we all, we've all lost someone, so it's definitely, you know, keeps it relatable.
Yeah, exactly. So.
I like on the album, you kind of throw in a little bit of like some like kind of chorus kind of stuff, like where the like the background vocals with it on the on the river.
Yeah.
That sounds real good. But I like that kind of like the way it kind of builds and stuff. It's a fun one.
Yeah, that was just one that just happened, you know, and I was like, wow.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, let's, so this is available, Witness, is available for pre-order.
Yeah.
Still. And a portion of it goes to Play It Forward, right?
Yeah, Play It Forward. We actually just got signed to a distribution label, or, you know, a record label, but we already had the record made, so it was a distribution deal with King Peanut out of Springfield, Missouri. So that was absolutely, you know, another really way cool thing to sign a contract and do that. It was just, you know, I was the last week of college, so it's like I finished college and signed my first deal in the first, you know, last week, which is a, you know, just an amazing, humbling feeling. And yeah, it's so like I think. $1 sale or what or something, yeah, like $1 of the sale of each CD goes to Play It Forward. I mean, that's such a great charity.
Definitely,
and everything.
Yeah,
it's wonderful. I love Samantha Fisher and what she's doing. And it's so weird because she just started the Springfield chapter, and I was like, this is, and the guy at King Peanut asked me, he's like, what kind of charity do you want us to donate to? And I was like, this is perfect. There's St. Louis, there's Springfield, there's Springfield, and it's all coming together. And, and you know, it's even special for me because Devin did that to me. He gave me instruments, and that helped me go along and helped me do the thing. And I did the same thing with my uncle, you know, and really doing that can really inspire and create the next, who knows, you know?
Yeah, we just had that 1 year party at Steve's Hot Dogs June 7th, and I had a bunch of my favorites come out and play. And but I also wanted to, you know, one, I had Samantha on the show, and so we became friendly, and but I wanted to kind of incorporate more, not just the music event, but as a community event. I wanted to have, you know, a local business, local bands, local charity. You know, I want it all inclusive kind of thing. And I reached out to Samantha. I said, hey, would you want to, you know, join us with this? And she's like, I'd love to. And obviously she knows Steve for years. And but I you know, put her on the flyer and made it a donation site for the day. And, you know, and I didn't know what to expect. You know, I was thinking, if we get anything, great, you know. And somebody walked, I didn't know them personally, and they walked in, they had two electric guitars and a stand and all the stuff they donated. And then my buddy Tim shows up, and he's a bass player, and he's got a bass that he actually tells me the story that he was one of his first bass, and he actually like won it from somehow, like through the point or something like that, you know, like it was some kind of giveaway they had going on. You know, he wanted to pay it forward, and he gave it, passed it on. And like, so we got two electric guitars, a bass guitar, and all kind, you know, like I said, all kinds of goodies to go with them. And like, it was a great day. It was very exciting. And to send Samantha back with these guitars, and just to think about the future, what this, you know, what it could do to some, you know, a young child's life. And to you know, she told a story, you know, about that, you know, she had a guitar she was going to gift this kid. That's all he's been wanting, is play guitar and stuff. And they, so it's just those, hearing those stories about these, you know, kids, and a lot of them, you know, come from broken home stuff or whatever. And if this is, can be that light, you know, for them, like it's really exciting.
Yeah. And instruments and music is a companion for you. You know, it's the one thing, no matter where you go in the world, where you're at, is the one consistent thing in your life. You know, I was hanging out with friends last night, and, you know, it was getting late, and I found a 4-string guitar and started playing it. You know, it's like, wherever you are, you're at home. If you're with that instrument, you've created that relationship.
Yeah, I think it's really cool that you, you know, that you partnered up for the,
It's my like little way to help. I mean, Samantha's helped me out so much. She, you know, she just introduced me to people and is so nice and comes out and supports and asked me to do play it forward things. And you know, we did the big 550 thing. She's done that for us a couple of times, and it's wonderful. So anything I can give back, you know, and that's saying for anything of the St. Louis community. And everyone's just kind of been so awesome at, you know, kind of bringing me in with open arms. And it's been a beautiful thing to meet so many great people, and it's just the beginning. That's the beautiful part. It's really just starting now, so.
Yeah, that's exciting times, man.
Yeah.
We don't have any official release party dates yet, right?
Yeah, no, we do not. That is the Weird Cricket Crook, it's going to be around October.
Okay.
So that's when it'll be. The Crook is, we're doing vinyls. So actually with the record's on pre-sale right now. You can get it at kingpeanut.net, or you can go to deltasoulrevival.com and get it on there. It'll say pre-order witness right at the top. It's the first tab you tap on that. It's real easy. So that's real easy. You can get it there. We have different kind of packages. We have a $10, $20, $30, $75. We actually have even a $450 private party package. And we do it anywhere within 300 miles of Springfield. So even if you're in KC or you're, you know, Memphis or something like that, we'll go and do it. We've actually sold one of those, and we're about to sell a second one too, which is really cool. It's great to meet guess I can call them fans. It's weird to call them fans, you know. But you know, fans that really just hang out and get to meet people, because that's what this business is about. So you can do that. Pre-sales are real important. That it's like any other thing. And pre-sales are, you know, more important than the actual sales, because judges the number that the label can get, you know, that they can order, and hypes up the record for it to come out and things like that. So pre-sales are way important. And we just thank anyone for checking it out. And people who pre-order it online get you'll get the single Witness whenever it comes out, which is going to be coming out in the next couple of months. We're trying to put a video with it. It all, like, logistically things, you know. Yeah. So, unfortunately, we don't. But the vinyls are what takes a long time to press. So we don't want to show up to a release party without without the goods, because that defeats the purpose.
Well, now, a friend of mine, Patrick Sweeney. You know Patrick?
I've heard the name, but
go check him out, because he's got some really good stuff. He's been on the show. But guy's an incredible talent, and but yeah, he's got a new album coming out, and he's in that same kind of boat where he's trying to wants to release it with vinyl as well, vinyl, CD, and digital, and all together. But you know, as vinyl's like been making a large comeback of recent years. There's been a lot more people wanting vinyl, and there's a lot more, so it's harder for the production companies to print the vinyl to keep up, and there was a lot more supply and demand, I guess, you know, right now. Like, there's a lot more people wanting it, so it's cool that vinyl's making that big of a comeback, you know. It's like, because I'm an enthusiast myself, so I try to buy everything in vinyl.
Nothing better than listening to it on vinyl, man.
Yeah, man.
There's nothing.
I'm excited to get myself a DSR vinyl.
It'll be awesome.
But you do have a date to plug. We got you can come see Tyler and Delta Soul Revival August 28th at the Bottleneck Blues Bar in Maristar Casino.
Opening for some guy.
Yeah, some guy named Devin Allman.
Devin Allman.
Yeah.
The Dab.
Yeah.
Bottleneck Blues Bar. I don't know the exact time we're playing, but I'm sure it's like right at doors. So get there early and come check out the set. It's a beautiful room, man.
Yeah.
It's a really beautiful room. And it's just going to be a night of great music. Catfish Willie's there as well. So it's going to be a full night of just absolute beautiful music, and I'm nothing but stoked for it.
Yeah, definitely, man. That's gonna be cool, man. That'd be a fun night.
It's always fun to catch, you know, because they're like my second family, you know.
Bobby Jr.
Yeah, Bobby Jr. He's just ridiculous.
Yeah, that guy's a lot of fun to watch.
He's just ridiculous. I love him to death, but I hate him at the same time, because he's so good, and I love it. But and it's really the coolest part about Devin's shows is the first time I opened, the first time I walked in there, I didn't know anyone. And now, thanks to the community and everything, I go in there and I know like so many people.
I get so many
hugs. It's family now, and it's just a beautiful feeling. I literally, especially when I've been living out of town, it was a family reunion every time between the people and the audience that I've gotten to know, and between just the Dab and you know, the close relationships.
Sure, man. Yeah, I mean, that's the power of music, man. That's what keeps me going to all the shows, is every time I, you know, there's some of my closest friends now are people I've met going to shows. Like, I go to a lot of shows by myself where I start talking, you know, just like you and at the Duck Room. You said you start talking to that guy because he was by himself. And I do the same thing. I start meeting people and talking, and then I see him at the next show, and I see him, you know, and that's so on and so on. And like, it's just, you know, it's fun to watch friendship and family, you know, come out of that stuff.
And that's the beautiful part about it. I mean, that's really, you know, human connection is why we live, and a very important part of life. So if you do something, especially in this business, they're really, what we're all looking for is just wonderful connections and meeting great people. It's just we do it through different ways, and the beautiful part is music speeds up that process.
I feel like if you're afraid to talk to somebody and you're at the same concert, you should never have to be afraid, because you know you've already got one thing in common. You're at the same show. You like the same music and stuff.
Yeah, so, your category, it's like a dating site. You know, it's like we punch in, your specifications.
Your similar interests, yeah. Right.
Exactly.
All right, man. Well, we'll wrap this up. You want me, what are you thinking? You want to, you thinking music is my wife or witness, or you want to play a track, a studio track from the Give Me
Yeah,
Taste?
Let's do Witness.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be the single off the record.
Okay.
This is my favorite one off the record. It's real rockin'.
Yeah.
I like that we end with it. It's actually about, and I didn't notice it till someone pointed out, but someone's like, that sounds like the most conceited song I've ever heard. And it's actually about, I started playing in like a black gospel church in Springfield. It was beautiful because all my idols, they're all like, we all learned it in church, learned in church. So I was like, I got to learn it in church. So I'd show up every Sunday and we'd play. It was Greater Metropolitan Baptist Church, Pastor Zach Woods. Beautiful people. I loved it. I still missed it a lot. And I played there for about a year and a half. Hammond B3 organ, all the good stuff. It was beautiful. But through that, I got a lot of gigs and things like that that were really cool and a lot. But there was a couple of them that... nothing to do with Greater Met.
G-Met!
Shout out. Nothing to do with that, that I was, you know, uncomfortable because there was some... I really don't like the pastors or... Not pastors or priests or anyone of any religion taking advantage of people for money. You know, I remember I went to one church and it was in a lower-income community and the pastor comes in a Cadillac Escalade and a nice suit. And he's just asking people for money and kind of using this beautiful thing, which is religion, that brings so many people together and changes so many lives and helps people, you know, act great. And I don't like that they abuse that power and make something beautiful into what it's not. So Witness is about that, and it's through the eyes of a corrupt preacher, not me with Kanye West complex, you know, but so that's what it is, and so the lyrics will make a lot more sense.
Okay, there you go. I always think of like Jake and Elwood in the church, like, you know, John Belushi doing cartwheels down the aisle and stuff. Like, I just that's what I think of blues in the church and all that stuff coming together.
Man, there's nothing like it. It's a beautiful experience, and the musicians in the gospel world are just second to none.
Sure,
second to none.
All right, Tyler, man, this has been a lot of fun getting to know you, getting to hang out, and actually, you know, getting to talk, man. This is it's been great. So thank you for doing this and episode 99, man.
The Wayne Gretzky episode.
Yeah, Wayne Gretzky episode.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for, you know, everything and doing what you're doing and supporting local music every way you can. I mean, people may always make a big deal out of musicians, but this, I don't care how cliche it is. It's really the fans. If the fans don't come out, if people don't support, if they don't do podcasts, things like that, then it doesn't work. None of it works. So I just really appreciate it, obviously, for helping me, but helping everyone. It's a beautiful thing you're doing, so keep doing it.
I appreciate that. Trying to do my part, man. Trying to spread the word. So yeah, man, we'll see you August 28th.
That sounds great. And August 7th at the Angry Beaver.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I should have paid attention to my notes before this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come out. You're listening this morning. Come out Friday night and Angry Beaver down on Broadway 9 to 1.
Mm-hmm.
Come get yourself some blues, rock guitar, get your fix.
Some good grooves. Bring your dancing shoes.
Yeah.
Well, I don't dancing leave, shoes to shake away your blues, man.
I don't leave home without them, man. My dancing shoes and my party pants. I don't leave home without them.
Exactly. Your birthday suit. You know, all your stuff in there.
All right, Tyler. That's it, man. Right. Thank you.
Thank you, brother. Cool. Rock on.